Hello and welcome to an undisclosed location. This is Murder Incorporated. I'm Buddy.
And I'm Harley.
And today we bring you Robert Lee Yates was a former Army helicopter pilot and also a serial killer. He was responsible for the deaths of at least 13 women, mostly sex workers, in Spokane and Walla Walla, Washington, between 1975 and 1998. Yates' crimes were heinous and caused immense pain and suffering to the families. This man was a monster. And with that, I'll leave it to you, Harley.
Wow, buddy, that was fantastic.
I know, it was almost like a computer wrote it for me.
It was almost like a computer. I wasn't going to say that, but...
I don't care.
You know, I have big news. We're moving up in the world, buddy, because people that might not know, our music at the beginning is Beethoven, Sixth Symphony or some crap like that.
It's the 14th.
And it was in a commercial the other day. I'm like, oh my God, is that
really?
Episode of Murder Incorporated?
Are you kidding me? That's
it was awesome. Like a big time commercial, like Nike or something. Like that. Yeah. It was like a big commercial. I'm like, they stole it from us.
Those bastards, let's sue them.
Sue Beethoven.
I'll sue Nike or whoever.
Yeah, sue Nike.
Beethoven's dead. We're not getting anything out of that.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty cool.
That is cool.
So, buddy.
Yes, Harley?
The first indication that there was a serial killer at work in and around the Eastern Washington city began on February 22nd, 1990. The Spokane Police Department was called to the 4100 block of East Upriver Drive on report of a young black female whose nude body was lying over an embankment near the Spokane River. The responding officers... and later the detectives, seeing that the young woman had been shot a couple of times, and the size of the entrance wounds suggested a small caliber gun had been used. So there was an extensive search of the area, and it failed to turn up any belongings or clothing or anything for this young woman. It also failed to turn up any bullets or spent shell casings.
So she was dropped off there.
Yeah. That's an indication that the killer either took care of cleaning up after himself, or that she was killed in a different location, yeah, like Bundy said. All that was found with the body was the victim's black wig, a green blanket, like those used in the military, okay, a multicolored blanket, and a white towel. It's like such a disturbing scene to think about, you know?
Yeah. What year was this? Did you say that?
I think I did. 1990. For once, I actually have the answer, buddy.
I know, right? That's amazing. You know, maybe if I would listen.
After some of the details of the discovery of the victim's body were made public, the victim was identified as 26-year-old Yolanda Sapp. The police soon learned that Sapp had a history of sex work arrests and was known to use drugs. She was last seen 2 days before her body was found in an area that was frequented by sex workers and pimps. At the time that she was last seen, buddy, she was wearing black jeans, black slip-on shoes, black panties, black t-shirt, and a beige, like a rabbit fur coat, and none of this was found with her body.
Really? Huh.
And after interviewing those close to her, the police determined that 9 bracelets were missing from her wrists, as was a silver chain necklace.
Just robbed those.
Yeah, but she was. 2 rings, one was a wedding ring, and a jean or like a denim purse. Mm-hmm. And as would be done with all of these victims, hair and fiber samples were taken during the autopsy, thank God.
Okay.
All right. As were oral, anal, and vaginal swabs.
So, to me, it sounds like it's, you know, it could just be seen as a robbery. A robbery is a pattern.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. The first one, I'm sure, yeah. A little more than a month later, another body was found. This time, this is Sunday, March 25th, 1990. The victim was a white female, and it was pretty clear that she had been shot to death. She was eventually identified as 34-year-old Nikki Lowe, and like the previous victim, had a history of sex work and drug abuse. Lowe was last seen a day earlier in the East Sprague area of Spokane.
Is it Spokane?
Yeah, it's Spokane. I should pronounce it wrong, just to like, you know.
But we do.
During Lowe's autopsy, a .22 caliber bullet was retrieved from her body, relatively intact, and it was noted that a strong odor of motor oil was coming from her body, and the toxicology test results confirmed the presence of cocaine in her body, which...
But no motor oil?
Yeah, no motor oil.
That's what I'm wondering. Like,
it was just like something they noted at the time, you know?
Yeah.
On the back of a truck, yeah.
Or yeah.
Although the detectives investigating the murders of Yolanda Sapp and Nikki Lowe were reasonably certain that both women had been done in the same by the same killer, there was very little headway made in the investigation over the next 7 weeks, and no additional bodies found either. So investigators were wondering where their killer had moved on to, right? And they were not wondering for long, nobody. On Tuesday, May 15th, 1990, the Spokane County Sheriff's Department responded to a report of a body found near the banks of the Spokane River. The victim was a white female and was nude except for the rings on her fingers. She also had contusions and lacerations to the head, prompting the investigators to believe, rightfully so, that she had been beaten with a blunt object. Also, there's gunshot wounds to that. I can't even imagine. I was like, when I was writing this, I was trying to think, like, what does that possibly be like? You know what I mean? It's just so horrible. So horrible. Like, you, not only that, this is like every sex worker's worst nightmare, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Going into it and to begin with.
Terrifying. Yeah.
And that this is what you're worried about every single time that you're with John, or, you know.
Right, of course.
And then for it to come true in such an awful way is just, it's really, really sad.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. Crime scene investigators recovered articles of female clothing from the scene, as well as a pair of shoes, a plastic bag stained with blood, a cigarette butt, and vegetation samples. This time, however, they found tire tracks, and the tire tread patterns were carefully photographed. Yeah, he does leave evidence. You know, it takes a while to bring it to him, but he does leave evidence. The latest victim was identified as Kathleen Brisboy, 38 years old. Bullets were recovered from her body during the autopsy, and trace evidence such as hair and fiber was collected and sent to the crime lab. Toxicology tests revealed the presence of morphine and cocaine in her body, indicating that she had used, like, right before her death.
So they're probably using them together.
That's what they're thinking, yeah. And they had no doubt, they said, that she was engaged in sex work activities at the time of death. So a lot of girls will pick up guys. Some of these guys only do drugs when they're with these sex workers, you know.
Right, right.
So there was an interview that I seen that they were saying that, which makes sense for your nerves or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
By now, because of the similarities in the victim's death, the fact that a small caliber gun was used in all of these, and the fact that they were all engaged in sex work, all these women, there was no doubt in the investigators' minds that they're dealing with a serial killer. Yeah, for sure. 2 days short of 2 years passed with no more victims being found. Well, none that they could attribute to the Spokane serial killer, which is what he now is known as, the Spokane serial killer. By the time the fourth victim came to the attention of the police, the investigators probing the original case didn't know if he had moved on somewhere different or got caught for something different, or they had no idea. They just had no idea. And later on, they think that he did not stop killing. They just could not attribute anything to him.
Getting better.
Yeah, it was weird because some bodies he would, like, they would just be thrown like garbage. Other bodies he would dig like little holes. So it was like, you just never knew with him, you know? You really never knew. Like,
it's kind of weird.
Yeah. Like, some bodies would be found right next. One would be just laying there, and then another would be like, not dug deep, but dug a hole. So it's just weird. I think the drugs have probably something to do with it, you know? I don't know. The awareness that the killer had started up in Spokane came about on Wednesday, May 13th, 1992, when a nude female body was found about a quarter mile east of Mount Spokane Park Drive. Articles of clothing were tangled in the area of the victim's arms and head, and a plastic bag covered her head.
Coach.
As with the previous victims, shoes and other clothing articles were found near the body. Criminalists found what they believed to be a bullet near the body, but no, like, spent shell casing. There was no sign of a struggle and no significant blood pooling in the area of the body, which indicated to the cops that the victim had been killed at a different location and brought to the site and dumped. As with the others, the cause of death was determined to have been gunshot wound to the head. Bullets were again obtained from the victim's body, along with hair, fiber, and orifice swabs. So this victim was identified through her fingerprints as Sherry Ann Palmer, only 19 years old. That's like, I have a 19-year-old daughter. I mean, that's just too young. This was the youngest victim so far. Subsequent follow-up investigation determined that Palmer had last been leaving Al's Motel, and this was known to be used by sex workers and their Johns. And this was Friday, May 1st, 1992. detectives learned that she had left the motel in a taxi at approximately 11 p.m., and this was to meet her boyfriend. However, she never arrived at the location where she said that she was going to meet him. 3 years passed before the next victim would be attributed to the Spokane serial killer. So there was a 2-year gap and then a 3-year gap, which is just
it's
insane. Yeah. I looked into it too, and I couldn't find anything concrete, you know what I mean? Like, where you'd say, oh, maybe that, you know, I just can't. I mean, I guess BTK, he didn't kill for 20 years, you know, and then he went back to killing again. So I guess
people can just, who knows, maybe he had stuff going on with him.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, got his jollies off rather than killing, you know. I don't freaking know.
I know what you mean, though.
What do killers do to, you know,
unwind,
yeah, besides kill?
Yeah. Yeah, that pretty much becomes your, like, total focus, you know? That's what
it's not. When's the next victim? When's the next time I'm going to do it? It's got to be right.
It's very rare for somebody to stop once they're into, like, this. He's killed 4 women, you know? He's in it. Yeah, it's weird. So, like I said, it had been 3 years passed before the next victim would be attributed to Spokane serial killer. By this time, Spokane investigators were communicating with their colleagues and other local areas and trying to come up with anything that would link the victims to a suspect, right? Unfortunately, all that these victims were linked by was their history of sex work, you know, and sad link.
It's a sad link, yeah, but it's
but there's no, so you can imagine, I mean, how many people go see sex workers every day, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's thousands and thousands of suspects.
Yeah.
With the latest victim on the other side of the state in Kitsap County, northwest of Seattle, then this was also linked to the Spokane serial killer. The investigators now knew that he was working in different locales, which is good. The fact that the latest victim was found in Western Washington also renewed fears that the Green River Killer might still be at work.
Okay. I don't know who that is.
He's killed the most sex workers of any... He's the most prolific serial killer ever in any country. Gary Ridgway. We'll cover him one day. He's killed like 86 sex workers.
Wow.
Or 68.
Still,
crap. It's an ungodly amount of number. That's like our graduating class, just dead. I mean, it's a little less, but you know what I mean.
Well, sounds more, isn't it?
Our graduating class had 97.
I thought it the other way.
You know, but still, I mean,
yeah,
that's twice my wife's graduating class.
Yeah.
Oh my god. So during this time, he had not been caught yet. So they're like, "What the hell?" You know, it was on.
Was he around that area?
He was in Washington. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Gary Ridgway, fun fact, people that know True Crime might know this already, but so he went for 2 polygraph tests and passed with the flying colors. People at work used to joke and call him Green River Gary.
Oh, really?
And he really was a Green River Killer.
That's funny. That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's terrifying. Like,
holy crap, that really was him?
And he would, like, give gifts from victims to, like, women at work and stuff like that to be nice.
Oh, God.
This lady's like, I was wearing this freaking ring for that long, and it was off a victim. Like, you know.
Jeez.
But Green River Gary, they called him, and he really was a Green River Killer. Unbelievable. It was on Friday, August 25th, 1995, that the nude body of 60-year-old Patricia L. Barnes was found in the vicinity in Kitsap County. So the Kitsap County Sheriff's Department was called to the scene, where they observed the body partly covered with, like, leaves, like, a little bit hidden, I guess.
Okay.
But, and there was hair curlers on the scene. So, yeah. So, however, he found a second pile of foliage similar to where her body was. And this had two plastic bags that contained hair curlers, like those found with the body.
Was she a sex worker?
So,
was just some 60-year-old.
So she was last seen with hair curlers. That's why.
Okay.
I don't know. I was wearing the same thing. I'm like,
I don't know.
I've seen movies people wearing them, but
yeah,
like, I didn't know people like wore them out.
I feel like you take them out. They curl the hair and then you take them out, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess in that 8 hours you have to leave them in if you have to go shopping or whatever. Yeah, you just go shopping.
I don't know. If you use hair curlers, let us know. And where can they let us know?
At murderincorporatedpod@gmail.com.
Do you wear them all the time?
We need to know, people.
These are important questions. Hey, while we're on it, how many subscribers do you think we got?
I don't know.
I haven't done a video in a while. Video's coming up next week.
Yep, next week.
Next
time.
Next recording.
So how many subscribers, buddy?
We are at 89 subscribers.
Hey.
11 subscribers.
11 souls that we need to make ours. I'm just kidding.
To make our one soul.
All right, people, listen.
Actually, I just met one of her fans.
No way.
Yeah. John, guy you work with, his wife.
Oh, I didn't know. I gave him the name of the podcast. I didn't know that he actually gave it to his wife.
I thought you said she was listening to it.
That's cool.
I could be wrong.
No, this is a while ago that I gave him. I just hadn't talked to him like about that. You know?
Yeah, because she.
He's like, my wife loves true crime, and so I sent him the name on WebEx or whatever. Yeah,
her name is Kate.
Hi, Kate.
Hi, Kate. Hopefully, you're actually listening, and I didn't just make this up.
Yeah. If not, any Kate out there, hi.
Yeah, exactly. Hello, Kate. How are you?
All right. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, he did ask for the name of the podcast. Nice. Trogdon's. Oh, so the detective's name is Trogdon.
Trogdor.
Well, I should just said Miller.
Do you know what that is? Trogdor.
No, what?
It's hilarious. Look it up sometime.
All right.
That's just this stupid YouTube thing from years and years ago.
Trogdor.
I can't even remember it. But it's...
So Miller's follow-up investigation showed that Barnes, so far the oldest victim of the Spokane serial killer, was last seen alive in Seattle on or about like August 29th, 1995, and was seen wearing curlers in her hair at the time. So Barnes was characterized as...
So they must wear curlers all the time.
I don't know. I hope somebody emails us. It was like,
all right. You guys are idiots.
So...
That's what they're going to say. Yes, of course they wear curlers.
Anyway. I don't know. I've never seen anybody wearing curlers.
I don't know how they work.
I'm going to have to freaking... I hope somebody writes. I really do.
Yeah.
You idiots. So, this is the weird thing. Okay. So, this is the one I wasn't sure. So, I told you that she was a sex worker. Uh-huh. So, she's not a sex... She's a street person, quote unquote.
Okay.
But not a sex worker.
Okay. So, she's probably a homeless...
Not homeless, but, you know, like, she hung out with that group of people, you know, like the sex workers and drug addicts and stuff like that, pimps. But she was, they said that she was not a sex worker.
Oh, really? Interesting.
So.
Just someone's grandma.
Yeah, definitely.
Just like the party scene. That's sad.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's all sad, I mean.
It is all sad.
None of these women.
We say that a lot, but it's true.
Especially, like, I mean, even you think younger, you know, especially like the 19-year-old, but then you think about the 60-year-old, like, crap, I mean, she lived a life and that robs her from it just out of the blue, like
she didn't get to find out how her hair was going to look.
I know, right? What the heck?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
The autopsy also recovered two 22 caliber bullets from her body.
So it's the same gun.
Yeah. Based on the evidence that was recovered, the victim's lifestyle, ballistics, the manner in which her new body was found, and the fact that it appeared that Barnes had been killed at a different location and her body dumped, prompted Miller to contact Detective Marvin Hill, assigned to the Spokane Police Department's Serial Killer Task Force. That's a mouthful. Wow. Okay. When the evidence and Barnes' background was compared to that of Spokane victims, there was little room for doubt that this is the same killer. That's a pretty smart detective. I got to give it to Miller.
Yeah.
To link those, even though she wasn't even a sex worker, that's pretty good. The horror that was taking toll on the eastern Washington city of Spokane reemerged 10 months after the Kitsap County case.
All these crazy names.
Yeah, I should have just freaking. I'm just going to start writing what I want. You know what I mean? Even if it's not right.
Yeah.
Just make up a state, everything.
Washingburg.
Yeah, Washingburg. Be a lot easier.
Yeah.
On Friday, June 14th, 1996, the decomposed body of 39-year-old Shannon Zielinski was found near the intersection of Mount Spokane Park Drive and Holcam Road in Spokane. Unlike previous victims who had been all found nude, Zielinski was like she had a short gray dress on. And according to detectives, a towel had been draped over her torso and a pair of pantyhose, a pair of white socks, and one high black boot was discovered nearby. So these are all very similar.
Yeah.
You know, they really are like, it's just shoot, rape, dump. You know, it's like pretty.
So he's shooting him first. Did you say that?
No,
you
we'll get to it, but no, that's what I mean. Yeah. So I think that some of these killers that they can't get it up. So they kill them and then they can get it up. You know, I could be wrong, but that's my theory.
I guess
they can't rush? Stand that person facing them. Right. So they can't get it off because of the pressure, even a sex worker. Right. And then, but once they shoot him, there's no pressure.
That's a scary theory.
Yeah. It is scary. That's what we do here, buddy.
That's right. Bring it all to light.
Yeah. There was no purse or identification found at the scene. And Zielinski's identity was learned following fingerprints. A shell casing was discovered at the scene, and like the others, there was little blood pooling and no sign of a struggle. All of which indicate what, buddy? They're killed at a different location.
I thought you were going to say that.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I had to replay what you just said. My brain was like, wait, what? He just asked me a question. Wait, what? I froze.
Sorry. Like all the others, she had been shot to death. As Detective Hill probes Lynch's background, he learned that she had known links to sex work. However, due to the decomposed condition of her body, toxicology tests were not possible. Really, if you want to kill people, as long as they're not found right away, you're doing yourself a favor. You know what I mean?
So you got to hide them good.
Yeah. I mean, like Ted Bundy said, you know, if you dig them deep, you'll never get caught, you know.
Yeah, but who has time to dig 6 feet deep?
Got to get minions.
That's right.
They can't talk.
Just get a bulldozer. And our bulldozer,
backhoe. Like
a backhoe or something. Yeah. There you go.
But that's what's scary, like some killers that, you know, like Ted Bundy, right? He buried his bodies. They only found bodies that, like, he let them find, you know? Yeah. So who knows how many more out there?
That's scary.
At least if the body's found, you get closure, right? Rather than just wondering forever what happened to your daughter or your son.
Right. Yeah, that's got to be one of the hardest things is, like, not knowing. So, I mean, you're like, in the back of your mind, you're like, yeah, they're dead. But if there's no body, like, they'll show up someday. So it's just got to be worse than it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's what people say, that it was better once they do. You know, I've seen that many times where people are like, even though they're dead, that what happened to them, it's better than not knowing. So the last time Zelinsky was seen, she was in the streets of Spokane, and she was seen drinking alcohol with a group of males and was contacted by a police officer, but not arrested. Just hassled.
Should have hassled a little harder.
Yeah, really. I know, I'm sure that cop tells himself that, you know, like, man, I shouldn't have freaking let her go, you know.
No.
According to witnesses, Zelinsky left a nearby house that same evening to work as a sex worker. She was wearing the same gray dress and black high boots and was not seen again until her body was discovered. Tuesday, August 26, 1997, more than a year after Shannon Zelinsky's body was found, was a busy day for Spokane detectives when two bodies were discovered. The first body was a very young girl, 20 years old, Heather L. Hernandez. She was a sex worker. So I'm not, you know, I'm disparaging these women at all. It is what it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hernandez's decomposing remains were found in a field, and she was only wearing a shirt and bra. There was no other clothing, shoes, purse, or ID found with the body. And one of the detectives seen a trail of blood that led from, like, the northeastern portion of the parking lot to the field where her body was found. Showing that her body was dragged to its final location. Mm-hmm. And she, like the others, had been killed by gunshot. In another location, Detective Smith, also a member of the Spokane Serial Murder Task Force, investigated the discovery of the body of an Asian female near the 9800 block of Forker Road. I hope somebody's listening from, like, around where this is, you know, and then they'll be like, oh, dead on her. Like, this is great. You know, like,
you think so?
The body was later identified through fingerprints as 16-year-old Jennifer Joseph. This is like, well, this one is really, really one. They're all sad, you know what I mean? But not even just because of rage, but
she's not even legal. So, like,
so she was not, like, a lot of sex workers are drug addicted, right? I mean, that's just a fact. And she liked the lifestyle. She just liked, you know, having sex for money. So it wasn't like she was forced into it or she had to do it, you know what I mean? Like, she chose this lifestyle.
So what does she need, you know?
Oh my god, so sad. Crime scene investigators recovered a light blue towel, a blouse that was missing a button. This will come back to be important later. The blouse that was missing a mother of pearl button, actually. Black pants, two shoes, panties, a portion of radio antenna, and a used condom. Like all of the others, the investigation suggested that she had been killed at another location, and then transported to the area where her body was found.
So they found a used condom.
Yeah.
That should have DNA.
Oh, yeah. They have lots of DNA in those.
Yeah.
All the women. Like, I mean, most of them, he didn't use condom, but he, you know. The cause of death, multiple gunshot wounds. I don't know if I said that. It was noted during the autopsy that Joseph's fingernails and toenails were painted with polish that contained a glitter, fragments of which were found on other parts of her body. Three stud-type earrings with small pale stones were present in her left ear, but only two were found in a right ear, indicating that either one got dislodged during the altercation, mm-hmm. or he took it for a trophy. Detectives determined that another sex worker who had been working with her in the East Sprague area last saw Joseph alive at 11:35 p.m., 10 days earlier. This is on August 16th. She said that she saw Joseph traveling eastbound on Thor in the company of a white male, approximately 30 to 40 years of age, in a car believed to have been a white Corvette. The car, as it turned out, would be the first real lead that tied to any suspects, which the cops completely bungled. But, you know, I'm not going to...
That's to be expected.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, like we said before, serial killers would not exist if not for people dropping the ball. They wouldn't. That's true. You know what I mean? Yep. Don't get me wrong. There's, for every guy that drops the ball, there's 10 that are really searching for this killer.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Of course.
Well, the investigation into the sex worker...
That's with any profession, though. People always want to drop the ball.
Oh,
Difference is like my profession, you drop the ball, a computer goes, and police profession, you drop the ball, someone dies.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely way higher stakes.
Sorry.
I mean, if you're in basketball, you drop the ball, you just drop the ball, pick it back up.
Hey, you drop the ball. In football, you drop the ball, get your ass kicked. Yeah.
Well, the investigation into these murders was in full swing. So they had undercover cops, like many. This is like a big, big, what do you call it?
Precinct?
No, like where they had undercover cops going as sex workers, you know, pretending to be sex workers.
Like a sting almost?
Yeah, like a sting operation. Yeah. So this is a huge sting operation.
Waco's? It doesn't matter.
This is when an officer of a routine patrol made first contact with Robert Lee Yates, Jr., 45 years old. Yates was driving a 1977 white Corvette and was stopped for just like a minor traffic on Wednesday, September 24th, 1997. And this was in the vicinity of Sprague and Ralph.
Okay.
He was ticketed and allowed to proceed. However, the connection between Yates' Corvette and the murder of Jennifer Joseph was not noted immediately because the patrolman mistakenly written in his report that he had been driving a Camaro.
Gah.
And like they use like they'll use like three letters, right? So he, instead of writing C-O-R or whatever, he wrote C-A-M-M.
Yeah.
So sad.
Aw.
Because they would have definitely checked him out then. I mean, he probably still would have killed people, you know, he would have been caught sooner, maybe.
Yep.
And in the meantime, bodies continued to pile up. On November 5th, 1997, local residents stumbled upon a decomposing corpse. The body, in an obvious attempt to conceal it, had been buried in a shallow grave and was located near a small stream. No clothing, with the exception of a blouse, was recovered. The corpse was later identified as Darla Sue Scott, 29 years old, who had many, many arrests for sex work and drugs, and she was in it, you know what I mean? So she had been shot, possibly with a 25 caliber or smaller caliber gun. A plastic bag with handwriting on it was recovered with Scott's body, as was a second grocery-type like plastic bag. A styrofoam packing peanut was found nearby in the road. Meanwhile, a month later, another body was found in the western part of the state. On Sunday, December 7th, 1997, Tacoma, Washington Police Department responded to a call of a body found in the 5000 block of South Adams Street at 1:30 p.m. The body was nude and was found partially, like, covered up by brush, like, partially. And what was believed to be the victim's clothing was, like, thrown over her body. And she had a plastic bag covering her head.
I wonder if he's suffocating them, or...
He's shooting, so you'll find out, but, like you could tell, or not tell, but... So he's putting the plastic bag over their head and shooting them so that the blood doesn't go in his car. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of, but...
I always get depressed when hearing these stories, you know?
Yeah, it is depressing. You know, it is depressing, but at the same time, you know, it makes me feel like I should be more grateful for my life, you know what I mean? Yeah. Because something could happen any day, and not just something like this, but you could have a heart attack tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, you never know. Just not wake up tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, so it is depressing, but it is... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Just enjoy every moment you got. You know, cherish it.
Yeah. No. And it's a hard thing to do sometimes. Missing from the crime scene was a large green purse that she was always known to have on her. And, like, costume jewelry that she always wore, like rings and stuff like that. Yep. The missing items of hers, as well as the numerous items not recovered from other victims, prompted the cops to think that he had been keeping these for souvenirs. The Tacoma investigators learned that Mercer was last seen late at night, December 6th, in the parking lot of a QFC grocery store. Shout out to QFC.
Do you know what QFC is? No. Quality Food Company.
Is it?
I have no idea. That's my guess. I've never heard of QFC in my life.
Me and you, I. That's why I gave him a shout out.
That's right. Shout out QFC.
Mercer. Mercer had a history of sex work and drug abuse. And toxicology tests revealed that she had used cocaine and opiates prior to her death. So this is like a, she's not the only one. Right before, they could tell, you know, right before that you're using drugs. So bets are that she's not doing well.
Right.
Another body was found on Wednesday, December 17th, 1997, a week before Christmas, in the same area of Spokane where Darla Sue Scott's body had been found in November.
I mean, how big is Spokane? It's like,
so it's like, I looked this up. So it's like 150,000 people, but the surrounding area is like 450,000 people.
It's pretty big.
It's like bigger than, a little bit bigger than Syracuse. The body, which was fully clothed and had plastic bags over her head, had been tossed over the side of a steep embankment where it rolled down the hill and came to rest like 25 feet from the edge of the road. Crime scene investigators recovered a number of hairs and fibers, which were sent to the state crime laboratory for processing. She had been shot to death. The body was later identified as that of 36-year-old Sean L. Johnson. She was last seen leaving a home in northeast Spokane 2 months earlier, on the evening of October 17th, to work as a sex worker in the East Sprague area. Johnson was supposed to have called her roommate later in the evening that she disappeared, but she failed to do so and was not seen again until her body was found. Although Johnson's vehicle was found in a Kmart parking lot on East Sprague on October 19th.
Shout out to Kmart.
Shout out to Kmart. Me too. The blue light special. So her car, was found in the Kmart parking lot, and it was reported as abandoned by a store employee. It was not taken as evidence by authorities until December 23rd, after her body had been found and had been determined that she was a victim of the elusive serial killer. It was processed for evidence, and a number of items were recovered, including hairs and fibers. So that's good. Two more female bodies were found the day after Christmas.
Jeez, a roll.
That's like insane. Both the bodies were covered with debris, for just like stuff around, you know, branches and stuff like that. But then there was also other foliage that was weird, like Japanese barberry, forsythia.
What?
I don't know. It's just like,
what did you just
say? Odd. It's just like odd stuff, you know. That wasn't stuff that grew there, you know what I mean?
Stuff that didn't belong. Gotcha.
Yeah. In addition to the vegetation, crime scene investigators recovered soil, rocks, concrete pieces, wood pieces, white paint chips, a red dyed feather, more peanut shells, cherry pits. You know, it's just like they're everywhere, these scenes, you know. I don't know what to say.
I'm just saying, like,
it comes back later. Okay. It's not like for nothing.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah. And a plastic plant identification tag, like that found on a plant at like a nursery that read Sweet William. Dun, 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 buddy. It comes. So when they catch him, there's stuff like this at his house.
Yeah, okay. It's like, is he just throwing out his trash with the women? Like,
I think when he drags them out of his vehicle, stuff that's in there, like, you know.
In his vehicle, it comes out with him. That makes sense.
That's the only thing I can think of. I mean,
yeah.
I never found out, but that's got to be it. Yeah, it is weird, like packing peanuts.
Yeah.
The bodies were identified as Laurel A. Wasson, 31, Sean A. McClenahan, 39.
Another Sean?
Yeah. Weird. And for a woman.
Yeah, I've never heard a woman named Sean. And now we've got two of them.
Two of them.
That's weird.
I was going to say something so fucked up. We're not going to meet them. I don't know why.
That's fucking horrible.
I don't know why that went in my head.
I guess you'll never meet them.
Each of the victims had three plastic bags over their heads. An autopsy showed that each had been shot to death. As with all the other victims, the site where the bodies were found was believed to be only a dumping site, and the murders happened elsewhere. It was also
he's probably just murdering him in his car, doing what he's got to do, and then just dropping him off wherever the hell he wants.
Yeah, definitely. It was also determined that Laurel Wasson was wearing a black trench coat when last seen, and Sean McClenahan was wearing a blue nylon coat. Both coats were missing from their bodies and were not recovered. Were these additional trophies for the serial killer. Yeah. Or is he building a wardrobe? Who knows? The police don't know yet. Since it appeared that an attempt had been made to conceal these bodies, along with the fact that like a large amount of debris and plant material was used, the investigators theorized that the debris and the plant material was brought from the suspect's home to these places. They noted that when a suspect was eventually identified, comparison of this vegetation could be made with that found at the suspect's house. Get it?
Got it.
I'm just going to start doing that throughout the episode. Got it? You get it, people?
Get it, good.
All right. On Sunday, February 28th, 1988, 2 months into the new year, buddy, a white female body was discovered.
Not in China.
Hmm?
Not in China.
No. China doesn't have yours. All right.
Their New Year's is like in February, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like February 23rd. Yeah. I only know that because I deal with so many people from China at work, so it's like around that third week in February.
So if you go over to China in 2003 over here in January, it's still 2002 over there?
Yeah.
Anyway.
China has a lot of holidays. Yeah. They have like three times as many holidays. I mean, they also work 18-hour days for no pay, you know, but they have a lot of holidays. Like they have one day, I remember I'm like trying to get hold of this lady in China. Shout out to Mei Ping and
no. Was that her real name?
Yeah. And what's that? It's like tomb sweeping day. I'm like, what? Tomb they go and clean day? Off the grave. It's actually a good idea.
Yeah.
They go and clean off people's graves and stuff like that.
That's interesting. That's a holiday.
Yeah.
People get off from work.
Everybody's off. Everybody.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Like Chinese New Year, they're shut right down in China.
Oh, yeah.
They're shut right down for 2 weeks or something.
Oh, yeah, the stock market almost crashes on that day.
It's crazy. Like, it's really not. And then they hit us as soon as I get back, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Sunday, February 28th, 1998, a white female body was discovered in a ditch in Graham Road in a rural area of Spokane, Washington. The body was identified as that of 41-year-old Sunny G. Oster. She was a known sex worker. And Oster's body was found fully clothed, and a pair of shoes had been discarded near the body. Oster died of gunshot wounds, and 3 plastic bags had been placed over her head. The last time anyone saw Oster alive was on November 1st, 1997. While she was working in East Sprague, she had been carrying a beige purse, which was not located, and which police believe had been taken as a trophy.
It seems like he's taken purses as...
He's got tons of trophies. Yeah, you're right. I mean, he's got tons of trophies by now.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, April 1st, 1998, the body of 34-year-old Linda Mabin was found in the 4800 block of East 14th Avenue. This is only like a short distance from where the bodies of Laurel Watson and Sean McLennan were found.
The triangulates.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I feel like he's dropped off enough bodies.
Yeah, for sure. Similar to Watson and McLennan, Mabin's body had been covered with vegetation that did not grow in the area and consisted of the same species previously found there. So this was like bolstering the investigative theory that perhaps the plant material had been brought from the perpetrator's home. Right. Mabin's body was fully clothed, and there were remnants of plastic bags in the area of her head. The body was badly decomposed, buddy, and animals had disturbed it. It was obvious it had been there for some time. The animal damage and degree of decomposition fit the time Mabin was last seen, which had been on November 21st, 1997, when she had been contacted by a police officer in East Prague. It was possible that she had seen the following night, but that was not confirmed for sure. She was reported missing on November 29th, 1997, by a Spokane County Health District employee that works with sex workers. So like one of those nurses type of deals, and they will hand out condoms and pepper spray and all that, you know. Yeah. Buddy knows. The fact that Mabin's body... Yeah, buddy's been there more times than he wants to admit.
Hey, it's a living. Yeah. Gotta do what you gotta do. You kidding me? No one would pick me up.
I would pick you up, buddy. You're a handsome dude. The fact that...
I'd pick you up, too.
Thank you. Pick me up. I'm too big.
I'd be a little nervous, though, that John's gonna...
Yeah. Like, why does he have a knife?
He's so handsome. I don't know. It's worth the risk.
The fact that Mabin's body was found in, like, so close to where Wasson's and McClanahan's bodies were found made investigators believe that the killer was using the site as a what's called a cluster dump site.
Okay.
So it's just basically where you dump more than one body.
Right.
However, an exhaustive search of the area failed to turn up any additional bodies. Well, I mean, there was three, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Additional investigation showed that Maben was known to use illicit drugs, particularly crack cocaine. Acquaintances told the police that she usually carried a pipe for smoking crack tucked inside her pants in her, like, her pelvic region. However, this pipe was not found. Only a folded paper towel was recovered from this area of her body. She was known to carry a velvet drawstring bag, like the Crown Royal bags, you know?
Okay, yeah.
Like one of those, but yeah. This was missing too. On Tuesday, July 7th, 1988, buddy, a white female body was found in a vacant lot near 218 in North Crest Line in Spokane. It was subsequently identified as that of Michelin J. Durning, 47. On Tuesday, July 7th, 1998, a white female body was found in a vacant lot in Spokane. It was subsequently identified as that as Michelin J. Durning, age 47. She was last seen July 4th, 1998, in Spokane. Durning's body had been covered with grass. Kind of trying to hide it a little bit, you know. A piece of styrofoam and two hot tub covers also covered her, which the detectives determined had come from a pile of debris in the vacant lot.
Too hot.
You know what a hot tub is, right?
I do know what a hot tub is. That's what I'm wondering, like a hot tub cover? Like
They're pretty hot. We had a hot tub, you know, and they're pretty freaking heavy duty.
Oh, yeah. No, those big things. Okay. Hey, well, that's why I said never mind, because it was in a vacant lot, so it was a vacant lot.
Yeah, that's true. That's why they call them vacant lots.
That's right.
They're vacant. Durning's body was nude, and her lower denture, engraved with her name, was missing from her mouth. Cause of death was gunshot wounds, and toxicology report had methamphetamine in her body right before she was dying.
I mean, it's all going to be terrifying, no matter what, but I mean, just to add speed on top of that, it's like...
Yeah, it's true. All right. On Tuesday, October 13th, 1998, the body of 35-year-old Connie L. Ellis, also known as Connie L. LaFontaine, was found in the vicinity of 1700 block of in Tacoma. When the Pierce County Sheriff's Department responded, they found that the body was very badly decomposed. It had three plastic bags over the head, and the victim had sustained a gunshot wound to the head. A 9 millimeter bullet was found at the scene. But follow-up investigation revealed that Ellis carried a small gun capable of firing a 9 millimeter bullet, prompting the investigators to believe that the bullet found at the scene had belonged to her and not to a killer. But her gun was not found.
Maybe she got the gun and discharged it, or if the gun was used on
her. It was just a whole bullet, so it wasn't...
Oh, okay.
It wasn't shot.
Oh, gotcha.
Because of the ongoing investigations of murdered sex workers in several counties that were obviously linked to the Spokane serial killer, he was clearly traveling across the state to carry out his murders. Pierce County detectives promptly notified the Spokane cops of their discovery. The discovery of Ellis's body brought the official body count attributed to the Spokane serial killer to 17.
Jeez. I was wondering what the body count was.
So it's been an hour and 4 minutes our time. You know, it won't be to whoever's listening, but we covered 17 people being murdered. That's it's so freaking tragic.
Holy crap.
Man. Yeah.
It's just terrible.
I wish I could have found more about the women.
I think that's the problem with, like, sex workers. It really is a life that people who run away and not a life have a lot of history dig into.
Yeah.
And, like, feel terrible about it.
I mean, it's so true.
I would assume that most sex workers have a troubled past.
Yeah. So I think that's where we're going to cut it this week, buddy. And I think we're going to come back next week with the evidence that brings down the Spokane serial killer. Yeah. You know, it's the thing is, too, that doesn't help the police is that the sex workers are trained. Their mind is trained. Do not trust the police, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do not trust the police, right? Don't give up anything to them. They're not your friend. They are the enemy.
Yeah.
So when they come into their area and then they're like, you know, wanting information, so it's very tough.
Yeah. That double-edged sword that you do, damn.
You know what we should do it for the podcast is when we donate our next money is donate to something that's like, I don't know. I haven't looked this up or anything. It's just coming off the top of my head. Something for like sex worker health or something like that. There's got to be something out there that supports sex workers in the cities that we could donate money.
Yeah. All right.
You know, I mean, the Cold Case Foundation is very, very important, but I think we could spread it around a little bit. Yeah. What do you think?
I agree. I think we need to start making more money.
Yeah, we need to make more money so we could donate more money. Got to put out episodes to do that, buddy.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, so anything you want to have for the people? Oh, you want to do some jokes, buddy?
Let's end it on a
I got a good one. I got a good one. Oh, okay.
Man, I had
Hey, how did the... What did the blind... I'm not saying this right. What did the blind gynecologist do? Or no, how did the blind gynecologist... Oh. How did the blind gynecologist communicate?
How?
Your red lips. Buddy, do you know it's so expensive to swim with the sharks?
Why?
It costs an arm and a leg.
I have some. I just thought about one like a while ago, and I was like, "Oh, that's perfect." I used it on Jess. Oh, what was it?
You got nothing? All right, I got. Hold on, let me see if Rebecca sent. She hasn't been sending me. Usually, she does. She's freaking slacking. She does text me all the time. See how I'm doing? Though she's good shit, but not the jokes. What's going on with this, Rebecca? You're freaking.
Come on, Rebecca. Here we
go. What are they? I don't get it. You know, I don't get this joke, but I'm still gonna do it. Go ahead.
I know you want to be a doctor, right?
Yeah.
I just could never be a doctor.
Why?
I just don't have the patience.
Oh, my God. All right. What did the zero say to the eight?
That he's afraid of seven?
Nice belt. I don't get it.
Oh, because he's sucking eight. It in. Yeah.
That's actually not bad. It's a thinker.
Do you know how many people are dead in that cemetery?
How many?
All of them.
Okay. That is true. That is very true. All right. I'm going to look up dirty jokes. Think or no? Oh, dirty jokes for kids. There we go. What? I don't know why you tell dirty jokes to kids.
What time did that man go to the dentist?
What time?
2:30.
Oh, my God.
Fucking stupid. What is the forest? What is Forrest Gump's password?
Forrest? Oh, I don't know what.
One forest, one.
Oh, my God.
So stupid. I hope you're all loving these.
I was at a sophisticated dinner party the other day, buddy. I forgot to tell you. When I farted loudly, one of the guests was appalled and said, "How dare you fart in front of my wife?" So I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't realize it was her turn."
That's so stupid. I love
that
it.
That really happened to me, buddy. That really happened to me.
Two peanuts were walking down the street. One was assaulted.
Oh, my God. These are all fart jokes. What is going on? Why are these all fart jokes?
Because fart jokes are the best.
Because they're kids.
What do you call a mac and cheese that gets all up in your face?
What?
Too close for comfort.
Oh my God. No, that's good. That's supposed to be funny, buddy. What did the booger say to your say to the finger? Pick on someone your own size. Nice. Oh my God. These are like really bad jokes.
Why can't you hear a pterodactyl going to the bathroom?
Why?
Because the pee is silent.
Oh my God. That's pretty good.
What do you call a pile of cats?
What?
A meowt.
Oh my God. Are you ready? What did the elephant say to the naked man?
What?
How do you breathe through that thing? That's stupid. That's pretty good.
That is good.
Really dumb, though.
I ordered a chicken and an egg online.
You did?
I'll let you know.
Oh, my God. All right, buddy. I think that's about it, unless you have more jokes.
Yeah.
I think I don't have any more laughing in me because they're so funny. I'm laughed out.
That's because they're dad jokes, and, you know, we're two dads. It's just,
yeah, that's true.
We find...
Yeah, in our miserable lives, you still can laugh. That's right. Good.
We got to laugh at something, right?
Yeah. Listen, people, I can't tell you like any more time. We're going to start blocking you if you don't grab somebody's phone and subscribe to YouTube. Listen, we have all your names and numbers, okay? So the next person that doesn't do that, blocked. You're out of our lives.
You think we lost them already?
Right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why wouldn't they be?
I don't know. Because the story is over.
And then... Next week on...
We're going to continue the story now, just because you weren't listening.
Yeah, for all the good listeners. Are you have anything, buddy?
Just take the time, and we love you, and we miss you, and we will talk to you soon. Harley's trying to drown me out of the music.
I was not. Keep going, buddy. It's okay.
Good night.
Keep going.
Hi, welcome to The Jury Room, a true crime podcast. My name is Kevin, and I will be your host on this journey. We will be covering some of the most heinous, some of the most unthinkable, and some of the most monstrous crimes to ever be committed against humanity. We will be covering cannibalistic serial killers, decades-old unsolved mysteries, cold cases, missing person cases, and everything in between. The Jury Room Podcast is available on most major podcasting platforms. please make sure you go subscribe and leave a review.